to my husband, Abraham, my family, friends, fellow veterans, Medal of Honor recipients, and patriots, thank you for your love and support. I'm honored and grateful to President Trump for his trust and confidence in nominating me to serve our country as the Director of National Intelligence at a time when trust in the intelligence community, unfortunately, is at an all-time low. Chuck Schumer admitted a few years ago, quote, "You take on the intelligence community, they have six ways from Sunday at getting back at you." For too long, faulty, inadequate, or weaponized intelligence have led to costly failures and the undermining of our national security and God-given freedoms enshrined in the Constitution. The most obvious example of one of these failures is our invasion of Iraq based upon a total fabrication or a complete failure of intelligence. This disastrous decision led to the deaths of tens of thousands of American soldiers, millions of people in the Middle East, mass migration, destabilization, and undermining of the security and stability of our European allies, the rise of ISIS, strengthening of Al-Qaeda and other Islamist jihadist groups, and strengthening Iran. Here are just a few other examples. The American people elected Donald Trump as their president not once but twice, and yet the FBI and intelligence agencies were politicized by his opponents to undermine his presidency and falsely portray him as a puppet of Putin. Title I of FISA was used illegally to obtain a warrant to spy on Trump campaign advisor Carter Page, using a Clinton campaign-funded false dossier as their so-called evidence. Biden campaign advisor Tony Blinken was the impetus for the 51 former senior intelligence officials' letter dismissing Hunter Biden's laptop as disinformation specifically to help Biden win the election. Former DNI James Clapper lied to this committee in 2013, denying the existence of programs that facilitated the mass collection of millions of Americans' phone and internet records, yet was never held accountable. Under John Brennan's leadership, the CIA abused its power to spy on Congress, to dodge oversight, lied about doing it until he was caught, and yet has never been held responsible. Under Biden, the FBI abused its power for political reasons to try to surveil Catholics who attend traditional Latin Mass, labeling them as quote-unquote radical traditionalist Catholics. Personally, just 24 hours after I criticized Kamala Harris and her nomination, I was placed on a secret domestic terror watch list called Quiet Skies. Sadly, there are more examples. The bottom line is this: this must end. President Trump's re-election is a clear mandate from the American people to break this cycle of failure, end the weaponization and politicization of the intelligence community, and begin to restore trust in those who've been charged with the critical task of securing our nation. If confirmed as DNI, I will do my very best to fulfill this mandate and bring leadership to the intelligence community with a laser-like focus on our essential mission, ensuring the safety, security, and freedom of the American people. As the president's principal intelligence advisor, I'll begin by leading by example, checking my own personal views at the door and committing to delivering intelligence that is collected, analyzed, and reported without bias, prejudice, or political influence. I enlisted in the Army because of the horrific terrorist attack on September 11th and volunteered to deploy to Iraq in 2005, where I served in a medical unit. After nearly 22 years in uniform with three combat deployments to the Middle East and Africa, I'm now a lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Army Reserve, where I serve as a battalion commander of soldiers in Oklahoma, Missouri, and Arkansas. I served in Congress for 8 years on the Homeland Security, Foreign Affairs, and Armed Services committees. And it's my experience in the military and in the halls of Congress that have given me a deep understanding of the complex challenges that our nation faces, in both roles engaging with world leaders, in both roles being privy to highly classified intelligence. So I know firsthand how essential accurate, unbiased, and timely intelligence is to the president, to Congress, and to our warfighters. I also know the heavy cost of intelligence failures and abuses. Senator Collins, you led the creation of ODNI specifically to address those intelligence failures of 9/11 and Iraq's so-called WMDs. The need for the ODNI under strong leadership still exists today. If confirmed, I'll bring my experience and fresh eyes to leading the intelligence community. And my day one priorities will be to assess the global threat environment, identify where gaps in our intelligence exist, integrate intelligence elements, increase information sharing, and ensure that unbiased, apolitical, objective collection and analysis to support the president and policymakers' decision-making occur. I'll work to end the politicization of the intelligence community and ensure there is a clear mission focus in the IC on its core mission of this unbiased, apolitical collection and analysis of intelligence to secure our nation. I'll work to rebuild trust through transparency and accountability. This is a national security imperative. And I'll work to assess and address efficiencies, redundancies, and effectiveness across ODNI to ensure focus of personnel and resources is on our core mission of national security. Now, in my meetings that I've had with many of you, you expressed bipartisan frustration about recent intelligence failures, as well as the lack of responsiveness to your requests for information. Whether it's the surprise October 7th Hamas terrorist attack, to the sudden takeover of Syria by Islamist extremists, failures to identify the source of COVID, anomalous health incidents, UAPs, drones, and more. If confirmed, I look forward to working with you to address these issues. Ensuring the safety, security, and freedom of the American people is a mandate of leadership that rises above partisan politics. If confirmed, my commitment to the president, to you, and to the American people is this. I will do my very best to find the truth, no matter where it leads, and share that truth with President Trump, his advisors, and you in Congress, providing you with that unbiased, timely, and accurate intelligence as you make the tough decisions that will impact the safety, security, and freedom of the American people. Now, before I close, I want to warn the American people who are watching at home. You may hear lies and smears in this hearing that will challenge my loyalty to and my love for our country. Those who oppose my nomination imply that I am loyal to something or someone other than God, my own conscience, and the Constitution of the United States. Accusing me of being Trump's puppet, Putin's puppet, Assad's puppet, a guru's puppet, Modi's puppet, not recognizing the absurdity of simultaneously being the puppet of five different puppet masters. The same tactic was used against President Trump and failed. The American people elected President Trump with a decisive victory and mandate for change. The fact is, what truly unsettles my political opponents is I refuse to be their puppet. I have no love for Assad or Gaddafi or any dictator. I just hate Al-Qaeda. I hate that we have leaders who cozy up to Islamist extremists, minimizing them to so-called rebels. As Jake Sullivan said to Hillary Clinton, quote, Al-Qaeda is on our side in Syria. Well, Syria is now controlled by an Al-Qaeda offshoot, HTS, led by an Islamist jihadist who danced in the streets on 9/11 and who was responsible for the killing of many American service members. Democrat senators in the past resorted to anti-Christian bigotry against some of President Trump's judicial nominees like Amy Coney Barrett and Brian Boucher. I condemn those actions as a Democrat in Congress at the time, as religious bigotry must be thoroughly condemned by all of us, no matter the religion. Unfortunately, there are some Democrat senators who still don't understand the principle of freedom of religion and Article 6 of the Constitution. Quote, no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States. Unfortunately, they're once again using the religious bigotry card, but this time trying to foment religious bigotry against Hindus and Hinduism. If anyone is sincerely interested in knowing more about my own personal spiritual path of Hinduism, I welcome you to go to my account on X, where I'll share more on this topic. If confirmed as Director of National Intelligence, I will continue to live by the oath that I have sworn at least 8 times in my life, both in uniform and as a member of Congress. I will support and defend our God-given freedoms enshrined in the Constitution of the United States, against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same. Thank you very much for your time. I look forward to your questions.
Thank you, Ms. Gabbard. A few reminders before we begin our five-minute round of questioning. First, a reminder to the audience, once again, I will not tolerate disruptions or disturbances, either in favor of or in opposition to Ms. Gabbard. We all came to hear from Ms. Gabbard, not from you. Two reminders to my colleagues. We'll have a five-minute round of questions. Not five and a half, not six, five-minute round. We will also have a closed session after this hearing in which you'll have another five-minute opportunity to ask questions. Second, if any question, as Senator Risch alluded to, begins to approach the line of classified material, my crack staff will advise me and I'll ask you to hold the question until we get to a closed setting.
Mr. Chairman, can I just inquire? I was under the understanding that if in the open round, because this is the only time the American people will be able to see this judgment, you'd agree if certain members needed to ask a second round of questions in the public setting, that would be available.
As is our custom, if a member waits until the end of the opening round and has a follow-up question, then we will permit that follow-up question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Gabbard, if confirmed, you'll be entrusted with our nation's most important secrets. We're all entrusted with that information to serve the American people and to keep our country safe. Unfortunately, as you said in your opening statement, we've seen too many instances in recent years of people who were trusted with classified information and went on to abuse and politicize that trust. For example, in October 2020, more than 50 former intelligence officers, many of whom still held a top secret clearance, wrote a letter invoking their credentials to make false claims about Hunter Biden's laptop, likely being Russian disinformation. Do you agree that this was an example of intelligence professionals abusing and politicizing their past positions and credentials?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I do. And it is an example of what needs to end and why the American people elected President Trump to bring about those necessary reforms.
Thank you. Will you commit that no one who abuses his past position and credentials in this fashion will hold a security clearance in the future?
Yes.
Thank you. Now, I want to be fair to my Democratic colleagues. Such abuses aren't just a problem on the left. Also in 2020, President Trump's former National Security Advisor, John Bolton, published a book in which he revealed sensitive conversations with the president on national security matters, including highly classified information. He didn't submit this book for review and approval to ensure that our national security secrets were protected. Do you agree that John Bolton's actions likewise undermined public trust?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Will you commit that no one who so abuses his past position and risks the exposure of classified information by publishing a book without submitting it for review and getting approval before publication will hold a security clearance again or be trusted with classified information again?
Yes.
Thank you. Let's move on to the topic of ODNI reform that I mentioned in my opening statement. Congress originally envisioned the ODNI to be a small coordinating agency that directs, rather than replicates, the now 18 constituent agencies that make up our intelligence community. Over the years, however, the ODNI has strayed from this vision to an organization that now publicly boasts nearly 2,000 people, more than half of whom are not detailed from an intelligence agency, but rather are career ODNI bureaucrats. They've even developed centers that are producing their own analysis. Will you commit today to working with this committee to restoring the ODNI to its original size, scope, and function?
Yes, Senator, I look forward to working with you and the committee as I, if confirmed, assess the current status of who is working in the ODNI and the function that they fulfill to make sure of its effectiveness and elimination of redundancies and bloating.
Thank you. Do you support some of the policy proposals I mentioned in my opening statement about capping the size of the ODNI, eliminating ODNI taxes, returning employees back to their home agencies to do real intelligence work?
Yes, Senator, I look forward to working with you as we assess where the ODNI needs to be in order to fulfill its core mission and function.
Thank you. And in your preparation for this hearing and this important responsibility, have you developed any thoughts that explains the mission creep and the empire building that we've seen at the ODNI in recent years?
Yes, Senator, I've had the opportunity to review the history of the ODNI, to speak to Ambassador Negroponte, the first Director of National Intelligence, as well as others who have served in this position. I think there are a number of contributing factors to the creation of centers, but offices like the recently eliminated office of DEI within ODNI, and other areas where I need to go in and assess the replication and the duplication of responsibilities that exist elsewhere and some of the other intelligence elements that ODNI has oversight over.
Thank you. Colleagues, I will lead by example and yield back 1 minute of my time and recognize the Vice Chair.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. That is a first. Ms. Gabbard, let me be clear, at least in my views. I salute your service to our country, but I have serious doubts about your judgment. And those are some of the areas that I want to pursue. First, until you are nominated by the president to be the DNI, you consistently praise the actions of Edward Snowden, some who I believe jeopardized the security of our nation and then, in an effort to flaunt that, fled to Russia. You even called Edward Snowden, and I quote here, a brave whistleblower. Every member of this committee supports the rights of legal whistleblowers. But Edward Snowden isn't a whistleblower. And in this case, I'm a lot closer to the chairman's words, where he said, Snowden is, quote, an egotistical, serial liar and traitor who, quote, deserves to rot in jail for the rest of his life. Scabbard, a simple yes or no question. Do you still think Edward Snowden is brave?
Now, Mr. Vice Chairman, Edward Snowden broke the law. I do not agree with or support with all of the information and intelligence that he released, nor the way in which he did it. There would have been opportunities for him to come to you on this committee or seek out the IG to release that information. The fact is, he also, even as he broke the law, released information that exposed egregious, illegal, and unconstitutional programs that are happening within our government that led to serious reforms that Congress undertook.
Chairman, we got 5 minutes. So I take your answer, you know, and these are your quotes. Brave, please join my bipartisan legislation calling for charges to be dropped against him. Do you disagree that legislation was not appropriate? Do you believe he is brave or not?
Yeah,
those words?
Once again, Senator, Edward Snowden broke the law.
Legislation and your words are still your beliefs. Yes or no, please.
I'm making myself very clear. Edward Snowden broke the law. He released information about the United States government's illegal activities. If I may just finish my thoughts, Senator. In this role that I've been nominated for, confirmed as Director of National Intelligence, I will be responsible for protecting our nation's secrets. And I have four immediate steps that I would take to prevent another Snowden-like leak.
Ma'am, I would simply ask you again. I don't think you're going to answer. I agree with Tom Cotton. He's a traitor. You, for years, until you got chosen by President Trump, have celebrated this guy as brave. You've called for him to be pardoned, for his charges to be dropped. I cannot imagine a director of national intelligence that would say that kind of behavior is okay. How would we maintain the trust of the IC and the contractors who work for it? How would we maintain the trust of our Five Eye partners? I find it very troubling. Let me move to 702. I know other members are going to raise this. Remember, the 702 is critical to our national security. 60% of the president's daily brief, 60% of the information President Trump gets every day in a PDB will come from this. You've had a long history of opposing 702. Many members of Congress have. But one of the things you actually done that not many have is not to reform it, but you actually said you wanted to repeal it. But now, whether it's, you know, confirmation conversion or whatever, you call 702 vital. And I'm quoting, because of significant FISA reforms have been enacted since you left Congress. Ms. Gabbard, what are the reforms that have led you to now support 702?
In the short time that I have, Senator, I will just note that my actions in legislation in Congress were done to draw attention to the egregious civil liberties violations that were occurring at that time.
Ms. Gabbard, I ask you a question. Please give me the courtesy of responding. You said the reforms now make you support it. What can you cite? Which reforms?
There are a number of reforms to include
in the
getting
new bill, in the new law
that,
right?
That all right. of you and your
Gabbard,
wisdom.
Ms. Gabbard, my time is getting short, but I got to just tell you, after the reforms were passed into law in April of 24, you went on Joe Rogan's podcast in May. The bill is now law. And you said, quote, "This bill took an already bad problem and made it many, many times worse." Again, in my mind, this is a question of judgment. 702 is critical. I appreciate this late conversion, but I'm not sure I buy it because you've had such a consistent position. Again, I know my colleague's going to raise these, but rather than standing up to dictators like Putin and Assad, you know, you've sometimes amplified his talking points. I mean, I just do not understand how you can blame NATO for Putin's brutal invasion of Ukraine. And when Assad used chemical weapons against his own people, you didn't condemn him. I can go through all the quotes. You actually questioned Americans' intelligence. Now, you mentioned a lot about trust. You know, and one of the things that I'm so proud on this committee is Senator, my friend Senator Burr said, we always follow the truth. I say on this committee, the most valuable work I do in this Senate, we have a bipartisan approach to intelligence. I think we have worked to try to keep the intelligence community and earn their trust, and frankly, earn the trust of the American people. But I respectfully, ma'am, I just don't believe on your judgment and credibility issues that this is the appropriate role that you should take going forward. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Gabbard, Edward Snowden does stand out as having done particularly grave harm to our national security by revealing top secret information, including sensitive sources and methods, thus jeopardizing agents in the field. So let me ask you a question. If confirmed, would you support or recommend a pardon or any kind of clemency for Edward Snowden?
Thank you for the question, Senator Collins. If confirmed as the Director of National Intelligence, my responsibility would be to ensure the security of our nation's secrets and would not take actions to advocate for any actions related to Snowden.
So the answer is no. Is
correct.
That correct? In 2020, you introduced the Protect Brave Whistleblowers Act, which would amend the Espionage Act to make it more difficult to prosecute individuals who reveal classified information. In particular, the bill would allow individuals to disclose even top secret information as long as it's not done with the specific intent to injure the United States or advantage any foreign nation. Your bill would also have created an affirmative defense if public disclosure of classified information were made for several reasons, one of which was to expose gross waste of funds. I strongly oppose this legislation, which would hamper our ability to prosecute people who give our adversaries classified information. So let me ask you this. Ms. Gabbard, do you still support providing individuals who have access to top secret information with the ability to make their own decisions regarding whether that information should be publicly disclosed, even though disclosure may cause tremendous harm to our country or our allies?
Senator, we cannot and should not have individual vigilantes within the intelligence community making their own decisions about how and where and when to expose our nation's secrets. The intent of the legislation that you have pointed out was pointed towards ensuring due process for those who are charged under the Espionage Act in a court of law. This is a law that has been abused in some cases and used for political purposes. President Obama charged more people under the Espionage Act than any all other presidents combined. If confirmed as the Director of National Intelligence, my sole focus and goal would be our nation's security, which includes ensuring the security of our nation's secrets. And I would work to make sure that we don't have any disclosures or vigilantes taking it upon themselves. There are numerous legal paths that will protect this information for those who feel they have concerns. And I look forward to working with you and this committee on making sure that those protections are known by every single person in the workforce and effectively implemented.
So you do not support allowing individuals to make their own decisions without authorization to disclose secret information, classified information?
Yes, and I believe we have the legal structure in place for those who have concerns to address them.
As you know, there has been speculation in the press that you met with Hezbollah, a terrorist organization affiliated with Iran. Have you ever knowingly met with any members, leaders, or affiliates of Hezbollah?
No, and it is an absurd accusation.
Let me ask you one final question in the short time we have left. With Hamas, ISIS-K, the Houthis, all the Iranian proxies in Syria and Iraq, Yemen, and Al-Qaeda all posing general resurgences in the Middle East, Africa, and Central Asia, I'm alarmed at the lack of focus by the IC on this threat to our safety. We don't want to have to call you back to this room after a terrorist attack and ask, how did the IC miss this? Great power competition, China, Russia, definitely pose threats to our country, but the terrorist threat is arguably the most imminent threat, according to former FBI Director Chris Wray. If confirmed, what would be your strategy to refocus the IC on the terrorist threat to our country and to Americans abroad?
Thank you, Senator. I agree with your assessment, and this speaks to the need for the ODNI to exist, to redirect those resources, identifying the gaps in intelligence so that we are able to get ahead of these threats instead of coming around after the fact and trying to assess why did we not know about this sooner so that we could have taken action to prevent it.
Thank you.
Senator Wyden.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Welcome, Ms. Gabbard.
Thank you.
I am going to try to get four questions in, so I'll be brief, and if you can reciprocate, that would be very much appreciated. We've been talking about Section 702, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, and I believe it's critical that the DNI support additional reforms to protect the privacy of law-abiding Americans. In your written response to committee questions, you wrote, and I quote, warrants should generally be required before an agency undertakes a U.S. person query of Section 702. Is this your current position?
Yes, it is, Senator. And as you'll note in that written response, I noted some exigent circumstances with which there may be other options. But I also want to make a note that a simple warrant requirement is ultimately going to be a policy decision that all of you will make. I would point to history, to some examples.
Time is short. I'm glad you answered in line with your written answer that you support a warrant. Section 702 also involves a huge loophole now that was included recently that could allow the government to force anyone with access to a Wi-Fi router or cable box to secretly participate in the warrantless surveillance program. Do you support, as I do, eliminating this language?
Senator, I would have to look more into that and assess, if confirmed, what the impacts of the implementation of the existing safeguards are and come back to you and Congress as you look at reauthorization.
It is a massive loophole, and I hope to hear after you've looked at it that you'll be supportive of my efforts. Let me turn now to the question of the Inspector General situation. Can the President of the United States refuse to fund the Inspector General for the intelligence community despite appropriations from Congress? And here I'd like a yes or no.
Senator, I don't know about the legal authorities, but I understand the essential role that the inspectors general play, and if confirmed, look forward to empowering our inspector general to fulfill their responsibility.
Good, because Congress either has the power of the purse or it doesn't, and I think in your answer to me, you recognize that you have an independent obligation to follow the law. I think that's a constructive answer. Let me turn now to the matter of spying on journalists. You wrote in your response to the committee questions that you support the Biden administration Department of Justice's policy restricting the collection of reporters' records, and you called for the codification of those restrictions. Will you reconfirm that position this morning?
I believe strongly in the First Amendment, which protects a free press.
So you will, in effect, say that you will continue to support the Biden administration policy to protect journalists?
I'm not familiar with the specific Biden administration policy, but I believe strongly in the defense of the First Amendment.
It is a policy that restricts the collection of reporters' records, and you have called for the codification of those records, so I am going to accept that you're not changing your position, and I appreciate it. I've got time, I think, for one more question. While you were in Congress, you introduced legislation prohibiting the government from mandating that Americans' phones or apps include mechanisms to allow the government to bypass encryption or other privacy technology. In your written responses to the committee questions, you reconfirmed your opposition to these mandates. Is that still your position?
Yes. These back doors lead down a dangerous path that can undermine Americans' Fourth Amendment rights and civil liberties.
You are being very helpful by moving so quickly. Let me turn to whistleblowers. You wrote in your response that whistleblowers must have clear protected channels to report concerns, including the unauthorized transmittal of classified information to appropriate entities such as members of Congress. Do you agree that IC whistleblowers must have a clear path to this committee and that they don't need permission from agencies to talk to us? That's a yes or no.
Senator, the answer is clearly yes. I would like to state a few other actions I would take if confirmed as Director of National Intelligence is, number one, make sure that we don't have illegal and unconstitutional programs within the intelligence community, making sure that we enact security clearance reform to limit access to our nation's top secrets, make sure that every single person in the workforce understands their rights as whistleblowers and the legal channels to take, which would include coming directly to you as members of Congress, as well as establishing a direct hotline to myself should they choose to take that path.
One last question, if I might. Would you support the declassification of the committee's full report on the CIA's torture program?
Senator, I believe in transparency. I have not seen this and so cannot make an honest assessment for that answer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cornyn.
Welcome, Ms. Gabbard. Congratulations and thank you for your service to our nation. I hope you will take to heart the chairman's comments about the exploding bureaucracy, not only in the government generally, but in the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. This is a critical role to be played, but unfortunately that role is not made easier or more effective by such a large, unwieldy bureaucracy. Do you believe that the President of the United States should get all of the lawfully collected intelligence that's available in order to inform his judgments as Commander-in-Chief?
Senator, not only is the answer a strong yes, I would say that it is the Director of National Intelligence responsibility to make sure that the President has access to all the intelligence so that he can make the best informed decisions for our country.
And you will be the one actually briefing him on a daily basis, correct?
That's correct.
And the president's daily brief, and we've heard that that is composed of about 60% of it's composed of information gleaned by collection under Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. I've heard your comments to Senator Wyden and others. You and I talked about the importance of getting dissenting views in front of the president so that we don't have groupthink, which can be very dangerous, particularly in the intelligence collection areas. And I appreciate your agreeing that presenting the policymakers, including the president, with dissenting views is very important. Are you aware that overwhelmingly the courts that have looked at a challenge to Section 702 based on the Fourth Amendment and any potential warrant requirement have overwhelmingly said that the Fourth Amendment is not implicated by search of lawfully collected intelligence?
I am aware, yes, Senator.
And do you disagree with that?
What I began to say in answer to Senator Wyden's previous question on this issue is, number one, the decision about a warrant requirement will be yours to make,
Intelligence. You'll be the Director of National Intelligence, and people will be wanting to hear from you about what we should do as policymakers. Admittedly, you're not going to be a policymaker, but you certainly will inform us. And you do agree that the courts have overwhelmingly held that a warrant is not required, correct?
Yes, Senator, I'm aware of the court rulings. What my commitment is to make sure that we uphold the Fourth Amendment rights of Americans in protecting against unlawful seizure and search. There are many different ways to do this. The devil is in the details. There are examples of how even in situations under Title I where a warrant is required to surveil a U.S. person.
Title I is different. I agree with you on that.
But my point, Senator, if I may just finish.
Excuse me. If that was misused in the case of Carter Page and an FBI lawyer lied in order to secure that warrant.
Which is why there are safe.
What would be necessary to be shown in order to establish probable cause to a judge in order to obtain a warrant?
Again, Senator, that's not for me to say. That would be for you all to decide and for the Attorney General to weigh in on.
Do you know what the elements of probable cause are and whether that's a practical and workable solution?
This is the center of the debate, the high standard of probable cause that's required to get a warrant, and why this will continue to be a conversation, again, with the Attorney General weighing in and all of you in Congress making this policy decision.
The CIA director, John Ratcliffe, said during his testimony before this committee that he believed that a warrant is not only required by law, but is actually impractical. Do you disagree with that or agree with that?
I will be in a better position to make an assessment on the practical implications of this if confirmed as DNI. My commitment remains to uphold the Constitution and Americans' Fourth Amendment rights.
In Lebanon in January 2017, Bassam Kawam personally paid for that trip, and Bassam and his brother Ilyas accompanied you to both Lebanon and Syria. The Kawam brothers have links to the Syrian Social Nationalist Party, an ally of Hezbollah. And in fact, in 2008, the Syrian Social Nationalist Party participated in the assassination of a former Lebanese prime minister and assisted Hezbollah in Beirut. When did you become aware of the links between the Kawam brothers and the Syrian Social Nationalist Party?
Senator, thank you for your question. Just a point of clarification. I paid for my own expenses and travel on that trip. I was not aware of any accusations of these two Lebanese Americans associations until after the trip occurred.
And that's when you reimbursed?
Correct. Correct. Not because of I wanted to make sure that there were no perceived conflicts of interest. I addressed this specific question to these Lebanese Americans who had organized the trip, and they vehemently denied any associations with that group.
There is not a great deal in the public record about what you and Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad discussed for so long in January of 2017. And I think there's a great deal of interest from the American people about what was discussed in that meeting. So what did you talk about, and did you press Assad on things like his use of chemical weapons, systematic torture, and the killing of so many Syrians?
Yes, Senator. I upon returning from this trip, I met with people like then Leader Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer, talked to them and answered their questions about the trip. And quite frankly, I was surprised that there was no one from the intelligence community or the State Department who reached out or showed any interest whatsoever in my takeaways from that trip. I would have been very happy to have a conversation and give them a back brief. I went with former Congressman Dennis Kucinich, who had been there many times before and who had met with Assad before. A number of topics were covered and discussed, and to directly answer your question, yes. I asked him tough questions about his own regime's actions, the use of chemical weapons, and the brutal tactics that were being used against his own people.
Were you able to extract any concessions from President Assad?
No, and I didn't expect to, but I felt these issues were important to address.
According to your revised trip report, your third meeting in Syria after meeting with Assad and then his wife was with Grand Mufti Ahmad Badreddin Hassoun, forgive me if I'm not pronouncing that correctly. In an October 2011 speech, the Grand Mufti warned the U.S. and Europe that we will prepare suicide bombers who are already in your countries if you bomb Syria or Lebanon. What was the goal, or what did you accomplish by meeting with Grand Mufti?
Yes, Senator, before going on the trip and during my time both in Syria and Lebanon, I made it a point to meet with different religious leaders, both Muslim leaders as well as various Christian and Catholic leaders who were there in the region. I did that both in Syria and in Lebanon to hear from them about what their concerns or thoughts were with regard to the war that was being waged at the time.
Were you aware of his threats regarding suicide bombers in the United States?
I was not, and had not heard that until today.
Who vetted the people that you met with on this trip to Syria and Lebanon?
The itinerary was created by former Congressman Dennis Kucinich, his constituents who he had traveled with to Syria and Lebanon a number of times before. Some of the individuals that I met with were looked at prior to the trip. Others came up during the trip that were unexpected.
Just in complete hindsight, would you view this trip as good judgment?
Yes, Senator. And I believe that leaders, whether you be in Congress or the President of the United States, can benefit greatly by going and engaging, boots on the ground, learning and listening and meeting directly with people, whether they be adversaries or friends.
Last question. Who do you blame? Who's responsible for the war in Ukraine?
Putin started the war in Ukraine.
Thank you. Sir Moran, before your questions, I want to extend all of our condolences to the, in particular to you, for the loss of life for your fellow Kansans last night in that air crash. Our prayers are with all of your people back home who lost loved ones.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So many people here and throughout the halls of Congress have been very kind and expressing their condolences, and I appreciate you saying this in this setting just now. Lieutenant Colonel Gabbard, you were asked in your questionnaire about your priorities, and you listed Iran and Hamas and Hezbollah and North Korea. You also mentioned Russia. But the only thing you said about Russia in fully explaining why it's a priority is ending the war with Russia. When you talk about Russia, what are your fears or policy priorities beyond ending the war? How do you see Russia as a threat to the United States?
Senator, if confirmed as the Director of National Intelligence, it will be paramount for me to assess where our intelligence gaps may exist, so that I can provide the President and all of you with the most accurate full picture of that threat assessment to directly answer your questions. I think that it is a complex environment. Russia remains a strategic competitor. There are a number of concerns that have to do with their nuclear weapons, as well as how the decisions and policies that are being made by this body and by the President will impact our own national security, which is my foremost concern.
I want to make certain that in no way does Russia get a pass in either your mind or your heart, or in any policy recommendation you would make or not make.
Senator, I'm offended by the question because my sole focus, commitment, and responsibility is about our own nation, our own security, and the interests of the American people. In carrying out the responsibilities of the Director of National Intelligence, if confirmed, no country, group, or individual will get a pass. In my fulfilling that responsibility of providing that full intelligence picture so that you all can make the best informed policy decisions for the safety, security, and freedom of the American people. You have my commitment to be completely objective, unbiased, and apolitical, and I hope you understand my commitment to our country's interest.
I absolutely do. You have answered my question in the manner in which I wanted to hear, that you will do this in an objective manner, provide the information necessary, and that Russia, if it's a threat, you will tell us so and tell us the details of that threat.
Yes, Senator.
How would you restructure the national intelligence priority framework to better align with President Trump's national security goals?
Senator, this is a discussion, if confirmed, I look forward to having with the President and his national security advisor, again, based on the threat assessment and based on the President's priorities. He has spoken about a number of different priorities in different parts of the world. I would work with them on that national intelligence priorities framework, which will serve as the foundation for the intelligence elements under ODNI.
Any recommendations that you have in mind to make to President Trump in that regard?
I want to make sure that any recommendations that I make to the President are fully informed. From where I sit now, I don't believe that I can make those recommendations. I take that responsibility seriously and wouldn't want to shortchange him without first doing the due diligence and work to make sure my recommendations are well-founded.
How will you, Lieutenant Colonel, as the DNI, if confirmed, meet the objectivity and political neutrality requirements to ensure that you're telling the White House what they need to hear and not what they want to hear? A follow-up to that is, how will you handle conflicting intelligence reports from the various members of the intelligence community and present a broad intelligence picture to the President?
Yeah, thank you for the question, Senator. I hope that you have confidence in my ability to extract politics from what my role will be as Director of National Intelligence, because it's something I've done for almost 22 years now of wearing the uniform, both serving in the National Guard and the Army Reserve, even while holding political office. There is a brick wall between the two, and I have fulfilled that obligation in uniform, as I will as Director of National Intelligence, if confirmed. I think the President, I know the President values hearing a lot of different views, and I would make sure that in the intelligence community's responsibilities that dissenting views are not only allowed but encouraged, and where they present themselves, make sure that the President and you as policymakers are aware so that you can make your best informed decision.
Would you agree with me that bias and prejudice, if it exists any place, exists in both sides of an issue, both partisan sides of this place called Washington, D.C., and the goal, the effort that you will make is to make certain that all the information is presented in a nonpartisan, direct, and manner based upon the facts as known.
Yes, Senator, I agree, and you have my commitment. This is essential for the American people and all of you to have faith and trust in the intelligence products that are being delivered.
One of the greatest challenges is knowing who's telling us the truth, and we need a DNI who tells the truth. True?
Yes. I have a long record of speaking truth to power and would continue that commitment if confirmed in this role.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Moran. Senator King.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Ms. Gabbard, I certainly want to applaud and express my appreciation for your service, both in the military and in the Congress, two very challenging jobs. And I want to thank you for that. I noted that Edward Snowden was in Hawaii, of all places, for a year and a half before he fled to Hong Kong and then on to Russia. Did you ever meet him or have any contact with him during that period or subsequently with telephone calls, emails, Zooms, contact with he or his lawyers?
No, Senator, not at any time have I had contact with Edward Snowden.
And you introduced a bill in 2020 that was essentially a pardon. It basically said all charges should be dropped. You had a lot of whereases in that bill. Where did the factual basis for those whereas clauses come from?
Senator, if I recall, in that bill, it came from publicly available information.
I see. And were you aware that there was a bipartisan committee report from the House Intelligence Committee in 2016 on Snowden's activities?
I don't recall specifically at that time, but I am aware of that committee's report and executive summary that was reported publicly. I did not have access to the classified report that summary was based on.
Did you read that report prior to filing your bill in 2020?
Senator, I don't recall specifically. I remember reading a lot of materials prior to filing that bill.
Well, the bipartisan committee report, the first item, Edward Snowden perpetrated the largest and most damaging public release of classified information in U.S. intelligence history, goes on to say Snowden caused tremendous damage to national security and the vast majority of the documents he stole have nothing to do with programs impacting individual privacy. But you don't recall ever seeing the work of that committee.
I'm aware of those conclusions drawn. Edward Snowden.
Were you aware at the time?
Yes, I was, Senator. And Edward Snowden broke the law. There's no question about that. He should not have released all of that information that caused that harm. There's no question about that.
How many documents did he release?
I know that he took over a million documents. I don't know specifically how many of those million he specifically released.
Well, you stated very unequivocally today, Snowden broke the law, but you introduced a bill in Congress along with Congressman Matt Gaetz to essentially pardon him. So he broke the law, but it wasn't all that serious? Is that what you thought in 2020?
I take very seriously upholding our Constitution and have sworn an oath to support and defend that Constitution over eight times in my life. My statements in the past have been reflective of the egregious and illegal programs that were exposed in that leak.
But you ignore the vast majority, as the committee found, bipartisan. I think Devin Nunes was the chair, Adam Schiff was the vice chair. The conclusion was that the vast majority of these things that he released had nothing to do with constitutional rights, the Fourth Amendment, but indeed were enormous compromises of our national security.
Senator, I focused on raising concerns around egregious, illegal, and unconstitutional programs that our government was conducting that clearly violated Americans' Fourth Amendment rights. I think the most important thing that I hope all of you find to be relevant here is that if confirmed as Director of National Intelligence, I would take seriously the responsibility to protect our nation's secrets, just as I have for almost 20 years of holding a security clearance of some sort myself, either secret or top secret, and have never once violated the responsibility and privilege that comes with holding that clearance, and have a specific action plan in place to make sure that there is not another Snowden-type leak in the future.
I think you testified that you never saw the classified version of this report.
That's correct.
On page 22 of the report, there's a heading that's not classified that says, what damage did Snowden cause? And then there's a lot of redacted material. Did that not raise a red flag for you? Or do you not recall?
Edward Snowden broke the law. Like I said, I did not have access to that classified.
Did you seek access to it?
I believe so, yes. This was quite some time ago.
but you still introduced your bill to essentially get
I take very seriously the protection of American civil liberties and our Fourth Amendment rights. If confirmed as Director of National Intelligence, I'd make sure that there is no further Snowden-type leak in the future and that those who have concerns have legal channels to raise those concerns so that we don't violate and release our nation's secrets.
There are about 20 countries in the
King,
world that don't.
Senator King, time has expired. Senator Lankford.
Tulsi, it's good to see you again. Thanks for the time
that
we got a chance to be able to spend together and be able to talk through a lot of these issues. Thanks for your service to the country, both in Congress, though you were in the wrong party at the time, and your service to the country through your service there, including in my great state in Oklahoma, that you had the opportunity to be able to serve there. I want to give an opportunity for you to be able to answer a few things on it, and I want to set some context. There's been a lot of questions about 702. And about Edward Snowden. And it may seem like this is repetitive to be able to come through it, but there are thousands of intelligence employees and folks that have, they have also taken an oath to the country and to the Constitution. They serve our country every day. They're the folks that don't have a uniform on, that no one ever says thank you to them, and no one ever buys them lunch because people don't know who they are. But they every day put their lives on the line, and they work very hard to be able to protect Americans. And when Edward Snowden got mad at his employer that he didn't get the promotion that he wanted and started harvesting information and then found some things that he didn't like on it and then kept going and then released them to media and went to China and then went from China to Russia and became a Russian citizen and continued to be able to layer out intelligence unrelated to the civil liberties of any American and then said, I have more and I can release them at any time I want. They don't see him as brave. They see him as a traitor. And the concern among so many here, and I think what a lot of the folks in the intelligence community that you'd have the responsibility to oversight is, they want to hear that you also believe the same thing, that not just he broke the law, but that he's a traitor, because they don't want that to ever happen again. And all the sources that they had, that they trusted and that trusted them, now their lives were at risk. And all the programs that they had that were determined lawful all collapsed, and that intelligence then was gone, and the president didn't have access to a lot of information for decision-making. So this is a big deal to everybody here because it's a big deal to everybody that you'll also oversee in that role as well. And so it's helpful for them to be able to hear your heart on this. So was Edward Snowden a traitor?
Senator, my heart is with my commitment to our Constitution and our nation's security.
Ours too.
Thank you. Yeah. I have shown throughout my almost 22 years of service in the military, as well as my time in Congress, how seriously I take the privilege of having access to classified information and our nation's secrets. And that's why I'm committed, if confirmed, as Director of National Intelligence, to join you in making sure that there is no future Snowden-type leak, and I would do so by taking four specific actions. Number one, again, to make sure that there are no illegal and unconstitutional programs, limiting in a big way those who have access to our nation's top secrets through security clearance reform, making sure that every single person in the workforce knows about the legal whistleblower channels available to them, and making sure that there's a direct line available to me should anyone have concerns. If people choose to step outside of those legal channels to raise any concerns about programs or actions that exist within the intelligence community that are classified, there will be no excuse to do so, and they should be charged and prosecuted under the law.
Was he a traitor at the time when he took America's secrets, released them in public, and then ran to China and became a Russian citizen?
Senator, I'm focused on the future and how we can prevent something like this from happening again.
So you would have the responsibility to be able to give counsel to the president, which is a great privilege. You already have his ear, quite frankly, and y'all have a great relationship on that, which is very beneficial. But when President Trump chose to take the strike on Soleimani, he was also at that same time going through an impeachment in the House. And you were kind of tough on him at the time about that. You called it a declaration of war. You said that the Soleimani strike will lead to an outcome that will further undermine our national security. As a member of Congress, I also take seriously declaration of war and our responsibility in that. He was acting in a way that he came out and the intelligence gave that Soleimani was in the process of preparing a strike on American citizens and those folks that were in the field at the time. I guess the question that I have is, the ODNI will sit with the president, will provide options to the president and say, here are the options that you could take. Would you have presented a Soleimani strike at that time, looking back at it now in retrospect, and saying this is an option you could take, and here's how to be able to do it?
Yeah, thank you, Senator. It's an important question. If confirmed as Director of National Intelligence, I would make sure that the President has all of the objective analysis and intelligence reporting so that he can make that best informed decision, including all of the options and actions that he has available to him, which should exist alongside an assessment of what the possible repercussions or responses to those actions may be. My own personal views have no place in that assessment and that providing to the president and his advisors with all of those options available.
Thank you, Senator Lankford. Senator Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to repeat my colleague's question to you. Thank you for being here. To answer these questions and for your service, was Edward Snowden a traitor to the United States of America?
Senator, I will also repeat my answer. He broke the law.
You said earlier that you were offended by a question that my colleague from Kansas asked, which I think was his duty as somebody on this committee to fulfill his responsibility to advise and consent. We are not here to be a rubber stamp for the President of the United States. So let me ask you again, do you believe, as the chairman of this committee believes, as the vast majority of members of our intelligence agencies believe, that Edward Snowden was a traitor to the United States of America?
Senator, if confirmed
this
as Director
when the rubber
of National
hits the road.
Intelligence,
this is,
I will
this
work
is not,
with you to make sure that there is not another Snowden
like Lee. This is not a moment for social media. It's not a moment to propagate conspiracy theories or attacks on journalism in the United States. This is when you need to answer the questions of the people whose votes you're asking for to be confirmed as the chief intelligence officer of this nation. As my colleague said, this is not about you. It's about the people that serve the intelligence agencies of the United States. Is Edward Snowden a traitor to the United States of America? That is not a hard question to answer when the stakes are this high.
Senator, as someone who has
served
in uniform.
Your answer, yes or no, is Edward Snowden a traitor to the United States of America?
As someone who has worn our uniform
in
combat, I understand how critical our national security is.
Apparently you don't. Apparently you don't. Let me ask you. I've worked very hard to put your own words here in front of the committee. Not, you know, fake news, not conspiracy theories on the internet, but the actual things that you have said. On February 23rd, 2022, at the very moment that Russian tanks were rolling across the peaceful border of Ukraine for the first time, you tweeted at 11:30 p.m. your time, this war and suffering could have easily been avoided if Biden administration / NATO had simply acknowledged Russia's legitimate security concerns regarding Ukraine's becoming a member of NATO. Did you say that, yes or no?
I believe you're reading my tweet, Senator.
Yes is the answer. A few months later, you said on your podcast, and I quoted it, quote, but this regime change war against Russia that the U.S. and NATO are waging via their proxy in Ukraine didn't begin when Putin invaded Ukraine. They had their eyes set on this objective long before that. Did you say that, yes or no?
I believe you're reading my tweet.
Thank you.
There's a lot more.
The answer is yes.
You're quoting a podcast that provided much more context.
I'm happy to have a conversation with the chairman about whether I'm taking anything out of context. I don't think I am. And your answer is yes. Are you aware that your comments about proxy wars and Russia's legitimate security concerns, to quote your own words, are in alignment with what the Russians have said to justify their invasion of Ukraine? Yes,
Senator,
or no?
Senator, I don't pay attention to Russian propaganda.
So
my goal is to speak the truth, regardless of whether
you
like it or not.
I'll take it. That's fine. You said you are used to speaking truth to power.
Yes.
I'm shocked to hear you now say that, you know, you are agreeing. I'm not shocked because I know you said it. You are agreeing that you basically said that Putin was justified in rolling over the peaceful border of Ukraine, the first time since World War II that a free nation had been invaded by a totalitarian state. And you were there at 11:30 p.m. that night to say that you were with them, not us. And let me tell you something. You say you don't know because you don't read Russian propaganda. Russian state TV then aired your comments. Did you know that?
Senator, I think you should also quote the statement that I made criticizing Putin for his invasion
of
Ukraine.
Mr. Chairman, with the last, it's up to all of us. We're the Senate. We get to decide whether we're going to confirm this nominee. Obviously, we didn't select this nominee. But can't we do better than somebody who doesn't believe in 702? Can't we believe that somebody who can't answer whether Snowden was a traitor five times today, who made excuses for Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine, the first time that I'm aware of any American official has done that? I'm questioning her judgment. That's the issue that's at stake here. And as you said, and I totally agree, this is about our intelligence officers. And you cannot answer. Most of what we do here is in secret. This is one of the very few opportunities that you will ever have to have a conversation with this panel in public. And so, the record is going to be very clear about the position you took with regard to Edward Snowden. And the record is going to be very clear about your reaffirmation of the statements you made in the middle of the night when Russia was invading the free country of Ukraine. And
Senator
I hope
Bennett,
we will take
time,
that in consideration when
Senator
we
Bennett,
have this vote.
Your time has expired. I will note that during Senator Bennett's question and answer, there was two disturbances in the room. The first sounded like a cell phone. I would ask everyone on both sides of the dais, if you have not silenced or turned off your cell phone, please do so now. The second disturbance was the cries of a small child. We will welcome such disturbances because the cries of an infant are the sound of answered prayers. Senator Rounds.
Not only here, but the answered prayers in church when they cry as well, Mr. Chairman. First of all, thank you for your service to our country. I think part of the discussion here, as you can see, we feel very, very strongly about FISA 702. We work with it literally every day. As you can also tell, we have some very, very strong feelings here with regard to the actions of Edward Snowden. I want to come back, and I'm going to give you an opportunity to make any corrections or to make any other comments with regard to both of those issues that have been brought up here. But before I get into that, I want to go back into a little bit of your previous history as well. You did serve as Hawaii's. You served as a congressperson for, 8 years?
Yes, Senator.
And during that time, you served on the Armed Services Committee. And during that time period, you did carry a TSSCI clearance. You worked your way through that time period. You had an opportunity to look at a lot of information. Can you share just a little bit about the way that you've looked at that, not just as a member of the congressional delegation from Hawaii, but also during the time in which you were a lieutenant colonel serving up through and including a battalion commander. Talk about that a little bit, please.
Thank you, Senator, for your question. In both of those roles, I had exposure to different sides of how critical our national security is and the unique role that our intelligence community plays in ensuring our national security. My most recent deployment with the military was as part of a joint special operations task force to Djibouti and Somalia, where our mission was to support the Somalis government and military's focus on defeating al-Shabaab, which is al-Qaeda's element there within East Africa. One of the things that we came across there that I hadn't known previously, even having served in Congress for 8 years because it hadn't been focused on, was how al-Shabaab specifically was the biggest funder of al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, which again should be of unique concern and interest to our own national security concerns. Being able to engage with world leaders in both capacities, in uniform and as a member of Congress, being a customer of intelligence in both of those roles, gives me a unique perspective, if confirmed as Director of National Intelligence, to come in with fresh eyes, to come in with some of the frustrations that I experienced as a member of Congress with the lack of information that we received from the intelligence community, oftentimes feeling as though everything we heard in a brief could have been read in the newspaper that morning. And the essential oversight role that all of you play here in Congress. You are unable to do so unless you are equipped with that intelligence and information. I'm committed to fulfilling that responsibility if confirmed as Director of National Intelligence.
Okay, now, when you and I first met, I told you that I thought you needed to kind of take a change in the direction that you were going with regard to how you were approaching the private conversations, and that we wanted you to sit down and meet with some folks who were directly involved in gathering the intelligence and so forth. You did that.
Yes.
And then we came back and we sat back down again. And what those individuals who I had talked to and I asked you to talk with shared with me that they thought that you were a quick study and that you had the opportunity to look at a number of the issues that this committee considers to be extremely sensitive, 702 in particular. Now, I've got about a minute left, but I want to give you an opportunity in front of this committee to share your position in your own words about how strong or how much it is needed with regard to the continuation of 702 and your support for it.
Thank you, Senator. 702 provides a unique security tool and capability that is essential for our national security. There are a number of areas that we would be blind from a national security perspective without this capability. It also must exist next to having safeguards in place to ensure Americans' civil liberties are protected. As you know, Senator, it is illegal under 702 to target any U.S. person. There are several other sections within FISA that speak to some of the civil liberties reforms that you all passed in last year's legislation.
So let me finish with this. 702 in its current form stays in effect for the next year. You would agree that there were reforms made which fixed a number of the items that you had a problem with in the first place. Is that correct?
It's correct, Senator, and some of those reforms that you enacted were a specific to some of the legislation that I introduced back when I was in Congress, such as prohibiting the abouts collection as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Round. Senator Gillibrand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Ms. Gabbard, for your service both in Congress and in our U.S. military. I want to talk to you a little bit about your perspectives on China. How do you view China in your national security role?
Our relationship with China is one that is complex. Given how closely our economies are linked, there are a number of challenges and threats that need to be navigated with respect to China, some of which have come up most recently with this very serious cyber exploitation and Salt Typhoon and Volt Typhoon that seemingly took us by surprise, and the compromising of our major telecom companies and an area of significant and great concern.
So some of your past statements that are relevant to China are concerning because I don't think it fully appreciates China's perspective towards the United States. For example, with regard to TikTok, your past statements have essentially said that requiring domestic ownership of TikTok is a violation of civil liberties The national security concerns are complete BS. Can you explain why you have this view on TikTok?
The position that I previously made, obviously not as a member of Congress, as you consider the TikTok legislation, were centered around the protection of Americans' First Amendment rights and the lack of data privacy legislation, frankly, that would apply to TikTok, Facebook, X, all of these different social media applications that collect on us as users of these applications. There were other provisions within that legislation that granted very vague and grandiose authorities to the president on deciding which private companies are or are not a national security threat.
So let's talk about China specifically, because this is where I want to make sure you understand what's at stake. We've had concerns over many years that when China owns infrastructure, it can manipulate that infrastructure. It can use it for spying. It could use it, turn it on or off. And you've actually addressed some of the most recent cyber attacks that we believe China had relevant participation. The challenge is if China owns TikTok, it means they can spy on the United States, on the American people. It can take all the data from our children. It can change the narrative about what people are talking about through their algorithms. If it wants to create misinformation or malign foreign influence, it's very easy. So can you understand why it's so important that we require domestic ownership of TikTok?
I understand the concern, Senator. I would just reiterate some of my concerns that I stated in the past about how this really is an issue about data privacy, because so much of what is collected by all of these even U.S.-owned companies can be sold to any country.
I get it. And that is a bigger issue for Congress to wrestle, and I am all in for that conversation. But I want you to appreciate China. What is your view with regard to Taiwan? Do you think it is something that your intelligence efforts will understand how important our relationship is with Taiwan, specifically on chips manufacturing? I think President Trump has most recently decided to have 100% tariff on all chips from Taiwan. And your statements, particularly about the bill we passed, the CHIPS Act, to make sure that domestic production is invested in, and so that we have that supply chain, and so we have that national security. But your public statements about the CHIPS Act have been very negative and don't seem to appreciate how important that independence is for our national security, to be beholden to China, to be beholden to Taiwan, to be in a place where we can't do our own national intelligence.
Yes, Senator, I fully support the investment in building and strengthening our own domestic capabilities. If I recall, that legislation had a lot of other provisions in it that had nothing to do with the production of our own capability, and I felt were a distraction away from and a potential obstacle towards achieving that.
So will recommend to the president that we continue to invest in the semiconductor industry in the United States for our own independence as well as our own national security?
Yes, Senator. And I would base my recommendations on a number of these, all of these issues, if confirmed as DNI, based on the full assessment of the intelligence picture so that the president understands the ramifications and the potential cost towards any one of these policy positions that he will make and all of you will make.
And last, I want to return to the Soleimani strike. At the time, you said it was illegal, that President Trump did was illegal, would cause very significant problems down the line. What is your position on that strike, and will you be able to advise the president in future issues with regard to national security?
Those broader issues that I raise with regard to war powers, I have been consistent on. I didn't have access to all of the information behind that strike at the time, and my concerns were that that may be an escalatory action. President Trump was right. There was no escalation beyond that. And his policies towards Iran turned out to be very effective for our own national security.
Thank you, Senator Gillibrand.
Do you disagree with the president taking away the protection for those who are now being targeted in retaliation for the Soleimani strike, such as previous Secretary Pompeo?
Senator, I can't answer that without being able to look at the intelligence assessment and the threat assessment for that or other decisions.
Thank you, Senator Gillibrand. Senator Young.
Tulsi, good to see you. We had a nice visit in the office.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being here today. It was clear from that visit in the office that we share a lot of concerns about ill-advised foreign regime change interventions, about the weaponization in certain instances of our domestic law enforcement and intel authorities. Let me talk about something, Edward Snowden, on which we may not agree. It's been recognized he fled overseas with the numbers 1.5 million classified documents. He shared them with the press. He absconded to China and Russia. Do you have any response to the bipartisan findings of the House Intel Committee, which stated that, quote, Snowden caused tremendous damage to national security, unquote, including to military, defense, and intelligence programs of great interest to America's adversaries? I'll give you an opportunity to respond, hopefully briefly.
Thank you, Senator. As I've said before, Edward Snowden broke the law, and I do not agree with how he chose to release information and the extent of the information and intelligence that he released. It's my focus on the future, and I think we can all agree that we do not want to have another Snowden-type leak, and I've laid out specific actions, if confirmed as DNI, to do that.
Okay. Well, it's notable you didn't say, yes, he clearly hurt in various ways our national security. The same House committee also reported that based on DOD assessments, should the Chinese or Russians access certain documents relating to DOD capabilities that we know Snowden stole, quote, American troops will be at greater risk in any future conflict, unquote. Do you have any reflection on this assessment?
I would be very concerned about that. I have not had access to the information or intelligence that led to that assessment. But anything that puts our men and women in uniform unnecessarily at risk should be a grave concern.
Yeah, I share that sentiment as a former Marine Corps intelligence officer. When we find that Americans, whether private citizens or contractors or uniformed personnel, have shared sensitive designs about military technology or plans to a foreign government, however well-intentioned, we rightfully throw the book at them. Snowden did just that. Yet you have argued and many times that he should be pardoned. You introduced legislation, as has been discussed here. He's been able to publicly hide, as I see it, behind this facade of being a so-called whistleblower. But he likely endangered American lives through his actions. So, as the leader of the intelligence community, how would you think you would be received based on some of these past actions to support or even to pardon Edward Snowden? Rank and file intelligence analysts and intelligence professionals. How do you think it'll be received?
I'm grateful, Senator, to have received letters of endorsement and support from many current and former individuals who've worked within the intelligence community, those who've worked or are still working within our military, because I believe they trust that my goal, my sole goal and interest, is in our nation's security and upholding our oath to the Constitution. And they trust that if confirmed as Director of National Intelligence, I will take the very specific steps that I have laid out in informing every single person within the intelligence community about the legal pathways they have to blow the whistle or to bring any concerns to the forefront, to include coming directly to members of Congress, to limit access so that we don't have people who are E3s or E4s or people in any situation taking it upon themselves to release classified information, giving them a direct line to me to once again make sure that we are all fulfilling our responsibility to ensure our national security and uphold our Constitution.
Thank you. Tulsi, was Edward Snowden false to an obligation or false to a duty?
I don't understand what you're saying. False?
Yes. Did he betray a duty? But did he betray the trust of the American people? Which is, according to Merriam-Webster, that's the definition of a traitor.
Edward Snowden broke the law, and he released this information in a way that he should not have. He also acknowledged and exposed information that was unconstitutional, which drove a lot of the reforms that this body has made over the years to make sure that Americans' constitutional rights are protected.
Well, for what it's worth, Mr. Snowden is watching these proceedings. He's posted on social media even, indicating that Tulsi Gabbard should indicate that I harm national security. This may be the rare instance in which I agree with Mr. Snowden. I think it would befit you and be helpful to the way you are perceived by members of the intelligence community if you would at least acknowledge that the greatest whistleblower in American history, so-called, harmed national security by breaking the laws of the land around our intel authorities. So thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks, Senator Young. Senator Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Colonel Gabbard, I want to first say thank you for your service to this country.
Likewise.
In Congress and in the Army. And thank you for meeting with me a couple of weeks ago, and thank you for being here today. You're nominated to lead and coordinate across the intelligence community's numerous sources of collection and analytic capabilities. In a few sentences, can you describe how you make assessments and how you're going to sift through all this intelligence and make careful and thoughtful conclusions?
Yes, Senator, there are great professionals who work within the intelligence community. I will build a strong team around me as they present the intelligence reporting to provide to the President through the President's daily brief and to respond to issues and concerns that this body has. I will welcome dissenting voices to be able to make sure that this information intelligence is thoroughly vetted prior to presenting it. And make sure that the truth is reported, whether that truth is convenient or not.
Well, thank you, Ms. Colonel Gabbard, and I appreciate that. The President and others are going to rely on that. I want to discuss such an assessment made by the IC. For years, the U.S. analyzed evidence of numerous chemical weapons attacks in Syria. Eventually, we were able to assess that Bashar al-Assad was responsible for a number of these attacks that slaughtered his own civilians. Do you accept the conclusion broadly that Assad used chemical weapons against Syrians?
Yes, and I'm on the record for years of agreeing with that broad assessment.
Thank you. Among the attacks the U.S. assessed Assad was responsible for are two that occurred in Douma and Khan Sheikhoun in Syria. As a member of Congress and as a presidential candidate and as recently as this month in your written responses to this committee, you have cast doubt on the assessment that Assad is culpable in these two attacks. Is that still your position?
Senator, I raised those questions given conflicting information and evidence that was presented at that time.
Okay. Well, thank you. So to help inform the public, the Trump administration released declassified intelligence in 2017 and again in 2018. Showing how experts analyze multiple types of evidence, satellite imagery, medical experts, witnesses, describing sources and showing the reasoning used to determine Assad's culpability in using these chemical weapons, including in Douma and Khan Sheikhoun in these attacks, the ones that you questioned. I have two documents I want to submit for the record, Mr. Chairman.
Admitted.
Thank you. Were you aware of the declassified assessments, the one I referenced?
Yes, I was.
And as a member of the House Armed Services Committee and the Foreign Affairs Committee, did you take time to review these?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And can you explain to me then why you doubted the intelligence community's conclusions in these two cases, Douma and Khan Sheikhoun, but not the others? And please be specific.
These two cases were being looked at as to be used as a pretext for a major military movement. And my fear was a repeat of the deployment of another 500,000 soldiers like we saw in Iraq towards what was the Obama administration's goal, which was regime change in Syria. The question specifically that I raised around these two came about because there were two reasons. One, that assessment was made with high confidence and low information. The information that they had came from those on the ground in an al-Qaeda-controlled area and therefore were al-Qaeda-linked sources. and there was conflicting information that came from the UN's Office on the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons Inspectors, as well as an MIT professor, Ted Postel.
So I want to talk about him for a second. So did you look into his credentials, yes or no?
Yes.
And were you aware of his appearances on Russian Today, which is used by the Russians to disseminate government-approved messages?
No.
Were you aware Postel relied on a chemistry student with a record of defending the Assad regime?
At that time, I was not. I have been made aware since.
Do you consider this person or these two individuals now, do you consider them a better source for the chemistry of sarin gas than the U.S. intelligence community?
I assess that at the time, the information, I don't know the second person you're referring to, but MIT professor Ted Postel and the inspectors of the OPCW provided some credible questions that deserved examination.
Okay, thank you. Did you attempt to weigh Postel's claims against the significant evidence and assessments already conducted by the IC?
Yes, I did.
Okay, thank you. So here's my concern here, Colonel. When we began this, you described a thoughtful approach to analyzing intelligence and reaching conclusions. This is what we expect of our professionals. But we just kind of walked through how you came to question Assad's use of chemical weapons in these two cases with a different approach. And I don't reject seeking out differing viewpoints. We need to do that. But you started from a place of doubting the conclusions of the U.S. intelligence community, and then you sought out information that confirmed your viewpoint. That led you to embrace the opinions of two individuals that I think we disagree on this. You think they had expertise, I do not, and others do not. But these individuals were sympathetic to Russia and the Assad regime. It also led you to minimize or discount the overwhelmingly information that contradicted your viewpoint, including the expert assessments of our own intelligence community. And they don't get it right 100% of the time. I get that. But what I have seen makes it clear that at the same time that you were skeptical of our intelligence community's assessments, you would not apply the same skepticism to information that came from sympathizers of Russia and Assad. And I think that's something that we should all be concerned about. Thank you. And I'm sorry for going over my
time. Thank you, Senator Kelly. I want to recognize and welcome to the committee our newest member, Senator Budd, although we all regret Senator Rubio's departure. We're all pleased, as evidenced by the 99-0 vote, that he is now the Secretary of State, and that also pleased that we have a great new member on our committee. Senator Budd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm grateful for your leadership here as well. Colonel Gabbard, great to see you again. I enjoyed meeting you in my office a while back, and I've enjoyed our friendship and our time serving together in the U.S. House. So, as you know, Section 3023 of Title 50 states any individual nominated for appointment as DNI shall have extensive national security expertise. You served four terms as a member of the House of Representatives, which is a constitutional office, and throughout your tenure, you were a member of the Armed Services Committee and the Foreign Affairs Committee. Is that correct?
Yes, Senator.
You also served over two decades in the U.S. Army, including holding commands at multiple levels and served through administrations of both political parties. Is that correct?
Yes, Senator.
Throughout your time in the U.S. House and in the Army, you've been both a consumer of intelligence and a policymaker. How important is it for the intelligence community to provide timely, relevant, factual, and objective intelligence to policymakers?
Senator, it is nothing less than a matter of our national security. Too often in the multitude of intelligence failures that our country has seen, that objective has not been met. Now CIA Director Ratcliffe talked about in his testimony before this committee how the CIA's own internal metrics have shown that analytic objectivity has gone down within that organization. This is the very kind of thing that I would seek to address if confirmed as Director of National Intelligence, is ensuring that politics, biases, or personal views are checked at the door. I would lead by example by doing it myself, and ensuring that that intelligence analysis and reporting meets the objective that the President and Congress requires, which is no politics, no personal abuses, and making sure that that objectivity in a timely, relevant fashion is brought to the president so that we can get ahead of problems in ensuring our national security rather than being caught on our heels and being forced to respond to them.
Thank you for that. I think it's clear from your background experience that you more than meet the statutory requirements for this position. I want to switch gears a little bit. There's been a lot of discussion today. I think it's a necessary discussion about your position on Section 702 of FISA. So I've personally had concerns, and I think we even talked about this when we served in the House together, and I actually voted against its reauthorization when I was in the House. However, I recently voted to reauthorize Section 702 with additional safeguards to end the politicization of the tool and to ensure privacy and civil liberties that they're protected. So, Ms. Gabbard, tell us, how has your thinking on Section 702 developed over time, and why? And if confirmed, what will you do to ensure that this new statutory safeguards, that they're fully implemented?
Well, Senator, as you pointed out, many of the concerns that we raised when we served in the House of Representatives were centered around the lack of safeguards to protect Americans' Fourth Amendment rights and civil liberties as it pertains to searching of U.S. persons with that incidental collection that occurs under 702. You and I both know and agree that the national security capability that is provided by Section 702 that enables this foreign surveillance on non-U.S. persons overseas is critical, period. My commitment is to make sure that our national security tools are maintained to fulfill that requirement while also protecting Americans' Fourth Amendment rights and protection against unlawful search and seizure. There are a number of those reforms that you referenced, such as the prohibition of abouts collection, which we brought up when we served in the House, making sure that 100% of U.S. persons by the FBI on this incidental collection are reviewed by the Attorney General herself. There are a number of other reforms that I believe strengthen significantly those safeguards, a number of them that I had worked to try to bring into place when I was in the House of Representatives. I look forward, if confirmed as Director of National Intelligence, to overseeing and assessing the implementation of these reforms and reporting back to you as you begin to consider next year's reauthorization and meeting that mark of ensuring our security and upholding Americans' Fourth Amendment protections.
Thank you. Switching gears a little bit, talk briefly, if you will, about the dual task of simultaneously protecting whistleblowers and protecting classified information.
Senator, there are more than sufficient legally protected routes for whistleblowers to come forward should they have concerns on any actions occurring within the intelligence community. I've spoken about the additional protections that I personally will put in place if confirmed as Director of National Intelligence, understanding the seriousness of protecting our nation's secrets and one that I hold personally.
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Budd. I will recognize Senator Wicker, an ex officio member of our committee, which is Latin for so powerful a man, he can go to any committee he wants and ask questions anytime.
I look at it differently, Mr. Chairman. I think what you're saying is that I'm the only non-voting member of this committee that's here at this hearing, and I've been at an Armed Services Committee hearing most of the morning. Let me ask about something that happened a long time ago and something about something that's happening right now. Colonel Gabbard, I was a member of the House of Representatives on 9/11, 2001. As a matter of fact, I was at the Pentagon that very morning when the attacks happened. Where were you when 9/11? We all remember where we were.
Yes, I was in Hawaii. There was a 5 or 6 hour time difference. And so when I woke up that morning, it was several hours, and I remember the first thing I saw in waking up was that horrific footage of those airplanes attacking the Twin Towers in New York City.
And I think you obviously have read a lot about it during the 24 plus years since that, and most Americans have. There's a general consensus that there was a massive intelligence failure. This caught us all by surprise, even though the World Trade Center had been attacked earlier. Do you do you think stovepiping was a problem in our intelligence failure?
There's no question about it, Senator.
Oh, okay. Well, based on your reading, okay, could you elaborate?
Absolutely, Senator. When we looked back at the post 9/11 reporting and the post assessments that were made, it was very clear that there was stovepiping of information and intelligence that occurred at many levels, at the highest but also at the lowest levels, where information that was collected by the FBI, information that was collected by the CIA, was not being shared. There was almost ships passing in the night, where if there was an integration of those intelligence elements and information being shared, it is highly likely that that horrific attack could have been prevented.
And that's the reason, really, your position was created. There's been some discussion this morning. I have not been able to listen in, but I understand there's been some discussion about reforming the Office of D&I to eliminate redundancy and increase effectiveness. Do you worry that in doing so, we might be getting back to the same problem that we had in 2001?
The problem that we had in 2001, Senator, remains at the forefront of my mind. And as you said, this is exactly why the ODNI was created. Given my limited vantage point not being in this seat, I am concerned that there are still problems with stovepiping that need to be addressed. And in some cases, my concern would be that unnecessary bureaucratic layers may be contributing to that problem. This is where coming in and being able to really take a fresh look, given my experience and my background, will be essential to making sure that the ODNI is accomplishing the reason why it was created in the first place.
Okay, and I have a lot of suggestions about how to make the Department of Defense more efficient also. I would simply caution you before I move on to my other quick question that as we are trying to eliminate overlaps, that we avoid getting back to the thing that created your agency to start with. Now, let me just ask about anomalous health incidents. I know you're not in the intelligence community yet, but having read, as most of us have, about these Havana syndrome incidents, what is your understanding of that now, and what are your plans?
Yeah, Senator, thank you for this question. It's been deeply concerning throughout this period, from the first time this was discovered so long ago to where we are today, that the intelligence community still has failed to identify the source and the cause for Havana syndrome, as it's commonly known, even as many people who are in service are suffering the consequences of it. I look forward, if confirmed as Director of National Intelligence, to addressing this, of course, making sure that those who have been impacted are getting the care that they need and deserve, but getting to the truth behind how and why this has occurred.
Are you saying that we're not any closer to understanding where these came from?
Based on my understanding, there has not been any definitive reporting from the intelligence community on the source and the cause for these anomalous health incidents.
Perhaps you'd like to, I could follow up on the record.
I'd look forward to that.
But I think there's some more public information that is recent about that. Thank you, ma'am. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator Wicker. As I acknowledge at the outset, it is the custom of this committee to allow a follow-up question for senators who remain present at the end of the regular five-minute round of questions. I remember everyone, this is a follow-up question, not a five-minute round. We will have Ms. Gabbard in a closed session where each of us will have yet another five-minute round of questioning. Is there any senator who wishes to be recognized for a follow-up question? Senator Wyden.
Thank you very much. Ms. Gabbard, there was an area that I believe is still uncertain, and this is what my question is about. Earlier this week, the Trump administration illegally attempted to withhold federal funds from a broad range of organizations. I'm interested in knowing what you would do if President Trump told you to withhold congressionally approved funds from the Intelligence Community Inspector General. So my question is, if President Trump orders you to withhold appropriated funds from the Inspector General, will you refuse that illegal order?
I don't believe for a second President Trump would ask me to do something that would break the law.
That's not what I'm asking. I'm asking if you are asked about an illegal order, what will you do? You can say, oh, it'll never happen. What will you do if you're dealing with an illegal order?
My commitment has been and will be, if confirmed as Director of National Intelligence, to comply with the law.
Given
are there, Senator Wyden, you've actually asked two questions already, Senator
Wyden. I'm not asking a question.
You've asked two questions. I said there's one question allowed. Are there other senators who would like to follow up question? Senator King.
I'd like to follow up on my line of questioning about Edward Snowden and understand how you analyzed the facts leading up to your 2020 bill providing him with a pardon. There was the House committee report, which granted was redacted, but under the heading, what damage did it cause, were 5.5 pages of redacted material. I would have thought that would raise a question in your mind. Secondly, Edward Snowden, there are about 20 countries that don't have extradition treaties with the U.S. He chose to go to Russia, become a Russian citizen. Given that information, how did you decide to introduce a bill providing him with a pardon? Introducing a bill in the United States Congress is not the same as a tweet or a commentary on a podcast. I'm concerned about your apparent lack of interest in the scope of Edward Snowden's traitorous activities.
Senator, I've answered this, some version of this question many times in this hearing already. My foremost concern has been, remains, and will continue to be in upholding my oath to the Constitution to support and defend Americans' Fourth Amendment constitutional rights. If confirmed as Director of National Intelligence, I'm committed to ensuring that we protect our nation's secrets by implementing a number of actions I've outlined so that those who have concerns about programs within our intelligence community, that we don't have another Snowden-like leak, and they are able to raise those concerns either directly with Congress or through any one of a number of legal paths that are available. And I think it's also important and in line with many of the bipartisan concerns I've heard from this committee in security classification, security clearance and classification reform, in narrowing severely those who have access to the most sensitive and compartmentalized intelligence reporting and capabilities.
Senator Bennett.
Thank you. Thank you for your generosity, Mr. Chairman, in letting us have a second question. Thank you again for hanging in there with this discussion, Colonel Gabbard. The House Intelligence Committee review of the Snowden disclosures found not only that he was a traitor, but that since Snowden's arrival in Moscow, he has had and continues to have contact with Russian intelligence services. You can see the deep concern on both sides of the aisle here. You had in your opening statement all kinds of complaints about former officials in the intelligence agencies, the United States press, the journalists, the media, Democrats, suggested that you weren't being treated fairly when you were coming here. No condemnation at all for this, which leads me to wonder why it is so hard for you to say that Edward Snowden was a traitor to our country. And the question I guess I have for you is how, if you can't say that, you feel that that the concerns that this committee has, that we need somebody here who will actually honor their oath, as you said. Maybe I should make it easier for you. Edwin Snowden did not honor his oath to the Constitution, which is what you just said was the most important duty, most important obligation that you have in this role. Why is he being treated like a folk hero by you instead of the traitor that he was?
Senator, as I said, my focus and what should be of relevance to all of you and everyone watching is What I will do as Director of National Intelligence to work with you to make sure there's not another Snowden-like leak, given the paramount importance of our national security and keeping our nation's secrets. I've laid out a number of ways that I intend to do that, if confirmed, in fulfilling my responsibility in this role.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Gillibrand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to continue along with regard to China, because it's such an important part of your portfolio. And I know on armed services, you've had hearings over the last 15 years about their architecture and how they're building up space capabilities, sea capabilities, Air Force capabilities, every type of capability they possibly could. And that aligned with their more their malign foreign influence and with their ambition with regard to Taiwan. It just creates a very dangerous scenario and concerning one. And so I wanted to ask you about Japan, because recently, about a year and a half ago, 13 months ago, you said that you didn't think it was wise to allow Japan to build up their own defense architecture. And you thought it was short-sighted. Can you speak a little bit about that? Because our alliance with Japan is so important in our ability to defend against malign activities of China, not only geographically, but because for the last 50 years they've been close allies, allies that we rely on. We share intelligence, we share operations, they are a great ally. So what was your concern about, and have you had any views that have shifted in that regard?
Yeah, thank you for the question, Senator. I agree. Japan has been a strong ally of the United States in a different capacity as a member of the Hawaii National Guard. I've gone and conducted training missions in Japan with the Japanese Self-Defense Force. Their forces and their constitution has been primarily focused on self-defense. The concerns that I had raised previously had to do with really looking at the bigger picture of the context of the history with Japan and China, and recognizing the implications of what how this kind of shift from a self-defense posture that Japan has had constitutionally to a more offensive posture could result in escalation. And given the history, we need to acknowledge what the ramifications could be to our own security interests. And that's something that I am looking forward to being able to provide to all of you and to the President, confirmed as Director of National Intelligence, is that in-depth analysis and assessment, so that various policies or actions that you all or the President are considering are fully thought through given that broader context of nuance of history and the complexities that exist within the Asia-Pacific region. Having grown up there, I'm very familiar with.
But you do.
Thank you, Senator Gillibrand. Okay. Senator Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Colonel Gabbard, when Russia was denying Assad's use of chemical weapons, they accused the U.S. of supporting terrorists. This is a line that Putin used frequently during the Syrian civil war as he supported Assad. Syrian officials made similar comments. They did it repeatedly. They did it in public. They did it at the United Nations. In 2016, you gave an interview in which you said, and this is a quote, "The U.S. is providing direct and indirect support to terrorist groups in order to overthrow the Syrian government." And in 2019, on the Democratic presidential debate stage, you said of President Trump, this is a quote, "This current president is continuing to betray us. We were supposed to be going after Al-Qaeda, but over years now, not only have we not gone after Al-Qaeda, our president is supporting Al-Qaeda." So I'm interested to hear, what was your goal in saying these things? And did you consider, before saying them, the motives of Iran and Russia, what their motives might have been before making these claims?
Senator, as someone who enlisted in the military specifically because of Al-Qaeda's terrorist attack on 9/11 and committing myself and my life to doing what I could to defeat these terrorists, it was shocking and a betrayal to me and every person who was killed on 9/11, their families and my brothers and sisters in uniform. When, as a member of Congress, I learned about President Obama's dual programs that he had begun really to overthrow the regime of Syria, and being willing to, through the CIA's timber sycamore program that has now been made public, of working with and arming and equipping al-Qaeda in an effort to overthrow that regime, starting yet another regime change war in the Middle East. DOD train and equip program, again, begun under President Obama, is widely been known, looked at, and studied, that ultimately resulted in over $500 million being used to train who they called moderate rebels, but were actually fighters working with and aligned with al-Qaeda's affiliate on the ground in Syria, all to move forward with their regime change and not acknowledging what was obvious at the time and what has unfortunately borne true, which was that a regime change war in Syria, much like the regime change wars in Iraq, the toppling of Gaddafi and Mubarak, while these are all dictators, would likely result in the rise of Islamist extremists like al-Qaeda taking power. I shed no tears for the fall of the Assad regime, but today we have an Islamist extremist who is now in charge of Syria, as I said, who danced on the streets to celebrate the 9/11 attack, who ruled over Idlib with an Islamist extremist governance, and who has already begun to persecute and kill and arrest religious minorities like Christians in Syria.
I understand.
Why that should be acceptable to anyone is beyond me.
It shouldn't
be. It is certainly
not
in our interest.
And I understand, but I appreciate your answer, and thank you. My concern has to do with the tendency to repeat Russian and Syrian, and even in some cases, I think we'll get into in the closed session, Iranian information, and to discount what comes from our intelligence community.
Senator, every American deserves to know that people in our own government were providing support to our sworn enemy, al-Qaeda. That should not be acceptable by anyone.
Thank you, Senator Kelly. Ms. Gabbard. In conclusion, Senator Warner.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, one of the things I love about this committee, and I know folks who are here for Ms. Gabbard may not fully remember, but this has always been a bipartisan committee. And you know, my friend Richard Burr, who said we always kind of followed the truth, one of the most things I was always proud of in the very challenging Russian investigation was, you know, people would come in, they didn't know whether the staffer was a Democrat or a Republican, because we were all looking out for the same thing. Ms. Gabbard, I support and commend you for your service. But we have heard this morning, taking some individuals' advice on chemical attacks, not taking American intelligence community, that as we subsequently discovered, had iffy ties, not enough due diligence. We've heard this morning on your trip to Lebanon that you weren't fully aware that the folks originally paid for the trip had these relations and ties to this Syrian party. I know I've asked and you, and I understand on the trip that you said you met with Shia religious figures and you didn't know who were there, who they were. I can understand that, although I can't imagine Shia religious figures that in the Bekaa Valley that didn't have ties to Hezbollah. And we can have a difference of opinion on TikTok. Chairman and I feel very strongly that it is a national security threat. On 702, I'm candidly confused. I thought you answered Senator Wyden. You're in favor of a warrant. Senator Cornyn, I thought you backed off of that. And then on Edward Snowden, you won't back off of Brave. You won't back off of your legislation. You won't call him a traitor. And I think again about, this is being watched by our allies around the world. I think even RT's been tweeting about it today, blasting me. And the men and women of the intelligence community. I don't know how they're going to have confidence that if some under your leadership, if somebody else stepped out, that you wouldn't take the same position that you've not walked away from on Mr. Snowden. So I guess my last question, this was one I think was in some of the press, and I believe you and your husband took a trip to Rome last summer. And, you know, I'm not talking about the conference. I think you didn't ask who paid for the trip. I just want to get this off the record right now. Not if you and your husband reimbursed, but did you pay for the trip in the outset or?
There was a nonprofit organization that was coordinating with the Vatican to set up this meeting that was centered around peace and security interests in the Western Hemisphere.
I'm not going to go into
that.
I just want to just make sure. So you didn't understand your trip was paid for by a gentleman named Pierre Louvarier and the Clementi Foundation?
The nonprofit, was paid for the trip.
Mr. Louvarier has enormous ties to Konstantin Malevov. I'm mispronouncing his name, but who is somebody that America has sanctioned. I imagine we can get into this in the classified hearing, but again, the due diligence that's required before you take these trips or make these assumptions is something that I find very troubling. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Warner. I would also note that same New York Times story reported that there's no indication that Ms. Gabbard did anything wrong on that trip. Ms. Gabbard, thank you for your time and for your testimony. Thank you, most importantly, for your service to our nation. As I said at the outset, it's no secret that this nomination has generated more attention and interest than most nominees before this committee. We have received a large number of statements, letters, and other such materials in support of and in opposition to Ms. Gabbard's nomination. I will submit all of those for the record. For the benefit of senators, it is also my intention to hold a committee vote on Ms. Gabbard's nomination as soon as possible. Therefore, for planning purposes, any senator who wishes to submit questions for the record after today's hearing, please do so by close of business tomorrow. That is Friday, January 31st, 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Now, let me explain what will happen next. Committee security and Mrs. Gabbard's security will escort her and her immediate party out of this room through the door behind me. Everyone else will remain seated in this room. The Capitol Police will secure that door so no one else leaves this room until Ms. Gabbard has reached her break room in preparation for the closed session. We will convene in that closed session in approximately 30 minutes at 1:10 p.m. This open session is adjourned.